You are tuned to Cambridge 105, community radio in Cambridge, and are just in time to attend the latest performance of Evening Under Lamplight with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson. The show is going out on this, the last day of October. That is, All Hallows' Eve, or Halloween for short. And we'll take this as our theme this evening, Under Lamplight. And don't forget, you can also find us online at momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can listen again to the show as podcast as many times as you want. And you can leave comments too, which are always good to receive. We're doing the show again in Axel's personal studio, and as I've said before, it's a joy to have Axel here with me as we do the show. But wait, before we begin, I want to play you something I just got hold of. The theme music for the Soupy Sales show, which I'm not in the least bit ashamed to say is my favorite television show. I found this piece through iTunes, where I'm told just that it's the theme music for the Soupy Sales show, but I don't get the title or the composer or the performers. I did discover this information some time ago, and while I've been looking through my notes for those names, but so far haven't found them. When I do, I'll let you know, but this tune is a real treat, and I've been playing it every day for the past week to start my mornings off bright. It's evening now, but you can never get too much of this song. Here it goes. I think the title was something like Magic Fingers or Sliding Fingers, two names that would fit, but I'll let you know when I find out. Soupy Sales had a great presence in front of the camera, a wonderful face and expressive gestures. The pies I can do without, they never thrilled me, but his improvised, or apparently improvised, off-the-cuff presence was always a treat, even when the jokes were not very funny. You can see some of his shows on YouTube, but the real flavor came when we'd watch every night after dinner and then talk about the shows the next day. But Soupy was also very knowledgeable about jazz and brought all the top musicians onto his jazz show, Soups On, early in his career. He knew what he was doing when he chose this tune as his theme. But let's not forget our theme of Halloween. Be sure, by the way, to include the apostrophe between the two E's to show that we've left out the V from Hallows Even. We ought to start off with the frivolous stuff and see if we can move into some more significant material as we progress. Halloween? Spooky, scary songs? Sure, why not? I know you're thinking of Boris Pickett's great classic Monster Mash, aren't you? I was just a wee kid when this song came out, which was perfect since it appeals, mostly, to the juvenile taste. But it must have appealed well since it stayed in my mind. You'll have to admit that there are some witty little turns of phrases in the song, and they're certainly having fun with the voices and the sound effects. The opening sound of the coffin lid rising was, so I read, created by pulling a rusty nail out of a board. And the boiling cauldron was just some studio guy with a straw and a glass of water. Attend to these effects.
In the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld flap began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrodes. They did the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sound. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drac's voice did ring. Seems he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, "Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drac's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what it sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash. With young boy.
Did you notice this isn't really a song, but more like a recitative, with Bobby Pickett speaking and the instruments and those sweet girls bringing in the early 60s dance rhythm? This was 1962, the time of all sorts of new dances, capitalizing on the popularity of the twist. You'll recall in the song that Dracula indignantly wonders whatever happened to his Transylvania twist. The monster mash followed D.D. Sharp's mashed potato. You moved your feet as though you were mashing potatoes, you see. Sort of chintzy, but we aim to inform here at Evening Under Lamplight. In Philadelphia, home of American Bandstand, we always felt the obligation to be up with all the latest dances. There's something a little odd about the way Halloween is celebrated as a popular holiday, aimed at the children mostly, and thus vulnerable to the crassest commercialization, but also keeping in touch with its roots in the world of witches and other threatening creatures. I still have very vivid memories of my little Golden Books copy of Donald Duck's Halloween, a pretty innocuous children's story, but there was one page with, I think, an orange sky and the characters all in black silhouette, which still haunts my imagination. Here, then, is a song that seems to combine the childlike innocence with surreal imagery that can haunt us for a long time. It's called Witch's Hat, by our old friends, the Incredible String Band. Let me give you the lyrics, and then listen to how Mike and Robin elaborate them with their distinctive shifts in pace and mode. Certainly the children have seen them, in quiet places where the moss grows green, colored shells jangle together, the wind is cold, the year is old, the trees whisper together, and bent in the wind they lean. Next week a monkey is coming to stay. If I was a witch's hat, sitting on her head like a paraffin stove, I'd fly away and be a bat. Across the air I would rove, stepping like a tightrope walker, putting one foot after another, wearing black cherries for rings.
Certainly the children have seen them in quiet places where the moss grows green. The wind is cold, the year is old, the trees whisper together and bend in the wind they lean. Next week a monkey is coming to stay. If I was a witch's hat, sitting on her head like a paraffin stove, I'd fly away and be a bat. Across the air I would stepping like a tightrope walker, putting one foot after another, wearing black cherries for rings.
The only excuse for that droning voice must be that it's a deliberate attempt to create a special effect. You work out what effect he's aiming for. That was the Incredible String Band's Witch's Hat. And we'll continue with another witch song that captures a kind of childlike innocence with some scary horror. It's an odd song by the Kinks called Wicked Annabella. Let's run over the lyrics before we let the music pull us into the eerie world of this song. In a dark and misty house where no Christian man has been, wicked Annabella mixes a brew that no one's ever seen. There's an image from Macbeth of the witch, mysterious, outside society, doing goodness knows what, but it seems pretty dangerous. And the details pile up. Relatives have passed her by, too scared to even say hello. She's in perpetual midnight. She shuts out the day and goes about her sinful ways. But the singer of the song has encountered her, of course. Is she really a witch, or just another version of Lola, the strong woman who overpowers the puer, the not-quite-grown-up boy, afraid of a real woman? I've seen her hair, I've seen her face, look towards mine. I've felt her eyes burning my soul, twisting my mind. And then, from this one boy to all children, warning them against wicked things waiting for them in the dark. Little children who are good should always go to sleep at night, 'cause wicked Annabella is up in the sky, hoping they will open their eyes. Don't go into the woods tonight, 'cause underneath the sticks and stones are lots of little demons enslaved by Annabelle, waiting just to carry you home. Andy Miller, who has written a really excellent book about the Village Green Preservation Society, the album this song appears on, calls Wicked Annabella the closest thing the Kinks ever came to the psychedelic genre of the freakout. He says, guitars growl and shriek, vocals are menacing, double-tracked and whispered. This is rather a crazy track, said Ray Davis. I just wanted to get one to sound as horrible as it could. I wanted a rude sound, and I got it. Here's a chance for you to get it too. I hope that didn't frighten you too much. Wicked Annabella by the Kinks. Andy Miller, whom we have just been hearing talking about this song, notes that the tales of Annabella's wickedness are all secondhand and are being employed to keep children in their beds and out of the wild woods. In this respect, it's a psychedelic nursery rhyme, though too scary and noisy for a lullaby. As the recording draws to its extended close, the tape is doused in echo and reverb, becoming a suitably infernal cauldron of feedback and disembodied laughter. And you may have noticed that it wasn't Ray Davis singing this time, but Dave Davis, with a pretty spooky voice, just barely holding back some kind of nastiness. Now, are you ready for one more psychedelic witch song? Or rather, a song about the season of the witch. Donovan's early psychedelic song from 1966, with that reverberating, hypnotizing bass intentionally brought up loud, and using just two chords, giving it a kind of focused intensity. The percussion, though, is not so much psychedelic as a jazzy ornamentation of the beat, more dissociation. Donovan, of course, was known for combining psychedelic with jazz. The words are pretty simple, expressing an incoherent amazement at all the confusion both out the window and in the window. It's strange, sure is strange. You gotta pick up every stitch. Two rabbits running in the ditch. Oh no, must be the season of the witch.
When I look out my window, many sights to see. And when I look in my window, so many different people to be. That it's strange.
There we heard Season of the Witch by Donovan. And here we are with Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge Community Radio, Cambridge 105, doing our thing for Halloween. Next comes a gothic tale, or at least the final pages of a gothic tale. It was a story Robert Louis Stevenson wrote as part of a series of tales of terror, or crawlers, as he called them, but he abandoned the story in justifiable disgust, the tale being horrid. A few years later, though, he was asked to supply a horror tale for the Christmas issue of a magazine and sent in this story, apologizing for it as blood-curdling enough and ugly enough to chill the blood of a grenadier. Of course, that was just what the magazine wanted, and they advertised the story all over London with such lurid posters that the police suppressed them. Not many people know the story these days, though they know the concept well enough. It's called The Body Snatcher, and concerns those men who raided the coffins of newly buried bodies in order to supply cadavers to medical students for dissection. A good topic for a crawler. I'm going to read you only the final page or so of the story, the gruesome climax. But first, let me sum up what has happened so far. The two main characters, McFarlane and Fettes, are medical students in Edinburgh who have the prestigious posts of assisting a celebrated medical lecturer in preparing his dissecting labs. This means, of course, illegally procuring cadavers for dissection. It gradually dawns on Fettes, who has something of a conscience left to him, that these fresh bodies have been murdered. McFarlane, however, persuades him that this is just the way of the world, and if he keeps quiet about it, no one will know, and he will easily rise in his profession. Good, expedient advice, though both unethical and immoral. One day, Fettes meets McFarlane in the company of a sleazy man called Gray, who seems to have some power over McFarlane, from whom he blatantly is extorting money. The next morning, McFarlane shows up at Fettes' door with a new body for the dissecting room, the body of that same man, Gray. It is obvious that McFarlane has murdered Gray to get rid of him and is disposing of the body through the effective means of having him dismembered and cut up in the lab. Fettes is horrified, but is consoled or seduced into ignoring his conscience, and soon he's able to carry on with his work as if nothing horrible had happened. One night, McFarlane and Fettes, needing a new corpse for the lab, travel outside Edinburgh to dig up the body of an old woman, who, they have heard, was just buried that day in the churchyard at Glen Course, a village in the Pentland Hills, not far, in fact, from the Stevensons' country cottage. The two men first have a good dinner at an inn as they wait for the evening to grow late, and then they set out for the churchyard in their gig or small carriage, in the darkness and the pouring rain, fine gothic touches that Stevenson well knew deserved to be part of this scene. And here's what happened next. It was by this time growing somewhat late. The gig, according to order, was brought round to the door with both lamps brightly shining, and the young men had to pay their bill and take the road. They announced that they were bound for Peebles and drove in that direction till they were clear of the last houses of the town. Then, extinguishing the lamps, returned upon their course and followed a by-road toward Glencourse. There was no sound but that of their own passage and the incessant, strident pouring of the rain. It was pitch dark. Here and there a white gate or a white stone in the wall guided them for a short space across the night. But for the most part it was a foot pace, and almost groping, that they picked their way through the resonant blackness to their solemn and isolated destination. In the sunken woods that traverse the neighborhood of the burying ground, the last glimmer failed them, and it became necessary to kindle a match and reillumine one of the lanterns of the gig. Thus, under the dripping trees, and environed by huge and moving shadows, they reached the scene of their unhallowed labours. They were both experienced in such affairs, and powerful with the spade, and they had scarce been 20 minutes at their task before they were rewarded by a dull rattle on the coffin lid. At the same moment MacFarlane, having hurt his hand upon a stone, flung it carelessly above his head. The grave, in which they now stood almost to the shoulders, was close to the edge of the plateau of the graveyard, and the gig lamp had been propped to better illuminate their labours against a tree, and on the immediate verge of the steep bank descending to the stream. Chance had taken a sure aim with the stone. There came a clang of broken glass. Night fell upon them. Sounds alternately dull and ringing announced the bounding of the lantern down the bank and its occasional collision with the trees. A stone or two, which it had dislodged in its descent, rattled behind it into the profundities of the glen, and then silence, like night, resumed its sway. And they might bend their hearing to its utmost pitch, but naught was to be heard except the rain, now marching to the wind, now steadily falling over miles of open country. They were so nearly at an end of their abhorred task that they judged it wisest to complete it in the dark. The coffin was exhumed and broken open, the body inserted into the dripping sack and carried between them to the gig, one mounted to keep it in its place and the other, taking the horse by the mouth, groped along by wall and bush until they reached the wider road by the fisher's tryst. Here was a faint, diffused radiancy, and they hailed it like daylight. By that they pushed the horse to a good pace and began to rattle along merrily in the direction of the town. They had both been wetted to the skin during their operations, and now, as the gig jumped among the deep ruts, the thing that stood propped between them fell now upon one and now upon the other. At every repetition of the horrid contact, each instinctively repelled it with the greater haste, and the process, natural though it was, began to tell upon the nerves of the companions. MacFarlane made some ill-favoured jest about the farmer's wife, but it came hollowly from his lips and was allowed to drop in silence. Still, their unnatural burden bumped from side to side, and now the head would be laid as if in confidence upon their shoulders, and now the drenching sackcloth would flap icily about their faces. A creeping chill began to possess the soul of Fettes. He peered at the bundle, and it seemed somehow larger than at first. All over the countryside, and from every degree of distance, the farm dogs accompanied their passage with tragic ululations. And it grew and grew upon his mind that some unnatural miracle had been accomplished, that some nameless change had befallen the dead body, and that it was in fear of their unholy burden that the dogs were howling. "For God's sake," said he, making a great effort to arrive at speech, "for God's sake, let's have a light." Seemingly MacFarlane was affected in the same direction, for though he made no reply, he stopped the horse, passed the reins to his companion, got down and proceeded to kindle the remaining lamp. They had by that time got no farther than the crossroad down to Auchendinny. The rain still poured as though the deluge were returning, and it was no easy matter to make a light in such a world of wet and darkness. When at last the flickering blue flame had been transferred to the wick and began to expand and clarify and shed a wide circle of misty brightness round the gig, it became possible for the two young men to see each other and the thing they had along with them. The rain had moulded the rough sacking to the outlines of the body underneath. The head was distinct from the trunk, the shoulders plainly modelled. Something at once spectral and human riveted their eyes upon the ghastly comrade of their drive. For some time MacFarlane stood motionless, holding up the lamp. A nameless dread was swathed like a wet sheet about the body, and tightened the white skin upon the face of Fetis. A fear that was meaningless, a horror of what could not be, kept mounting in his brain. Another beat of the watch, and he had spoken, but his comrade forestalled him. "This is not a woman," said MacFarlane in a hushed voice. "It was a woman when we put her in," whispered Fetis. "Hold that lamp," said the other. "I must see her face." And as Fetis took the lamp, his companion untied the fastenings of the sack and drew down the cover from the head. The light fell very clear upon the dark, well-moulded features and smooth-shaven cheeks of a too familiar countenance, often beheld in dreams of both of these young men. A wild yell rang up in the night, and each leapt upon his own side into the roadway. The lamp fell, broke, and was extinguished, and the horse, terrified by this unusual commotion, bounded and went off towards Edinburgh at a gallop, bearing along with it the sole occupant of the gig, the body of the dead and long dissected Grey. That was the Allegretto movement of the violin and piano sonata by Janáček, played by Volodya Bazalovsky on violin and Christoph Thieler on piano. Sort of spooky for that ending of The Body Snatchers. Not a very profound tale, but then Stevenson never pretended that it was. Its value lies in those vivid details, so clear and so perfectly gothic. But let's move on now, away from witches, corpses, and ghosts, to metaphorical ghosts. We'll have to see how this next song fits in. Maybe a little refreshing, maybe a little silly. But let's see how it goes. There's a Ghost in My House, a Motown hit by R. Dean Taylor. His girl has gone. He still loves her. It feels like she's still in his house, like a ghost, you see.
There's a ghost. The love you took from me, where our love used to be. Only shadows from the past I see. Time can't seem to erase the vision of your smiling face. Though you found someone new, I can't get over.
sitting in my easy chair. I feel your fingers running through my hair. Looking down in my coffee cup, I think I see your face looking up. All alone in my gloom, your voice echoes through the room. There's a ghost in my house, and I can't hide from this ghost of your love that's inside. It keeps on haunting me, just keeps on reminding me.
Okay, okay, get rid of that song. Axel and I agree that this is a pretty bad song. It was a hit in Canada and in the UK, but not in America. It's a pretty cliché depiction, too, of the lover that's gone as a ghost haunting the one left behind. Very sad, of course, but facile. It's also actually haunting, as I can attest, having had it running through my head this past week. But it feels no more profound than an episode of Scooby-Doo. But now, here's the way such a situation might really be described, not so much concerned with the ghost of the old lover as with the ghost of our old love. And so much more evocative of the confused, wearisome feel of this moment. As we've already done several times this evening, let's just go through the lyrics first, and then we'll hear the song itself. Oh, and what is the song? It's called Standing in the Doorway. It's from Bob Dylan's 1997 album, Time Out of Mind. I'm walking through the summer nights, jukebox playing low. Yesterday, everything was going too fast. Today, it's moving too slow. I got no place left to turn. I've got nothing left to burn. Don't know if I saw you, if I would kiss you or kill you. It probably wouldn't matter to you anyhow. You left me standing in the doorway crying. I got nothing to go back to now. The light in this place is so bad, making me sick in the head. All the laughter is just making me sad. The stars have turned cherry red. I'm strumming on my gay guitar, smoking a cheap cigar. The ghost of our old love has not gone away. Don't look like it will anytime soon. You left me standing in the doorway crying under the midnight moon. Maybe they'll get me and maybe they won't, but not tonight and it won't be here. There are things I could say, but I don't. I know the mercy of God must be near. I've been riding the midnight train, got ice water in my veins. I would be crazy if I took you back. It would go up against every rule. You left me standing in the doorway crying, suffering like a fool. When the last rays of daylight go down, buddy, you'll roll no more. I can hear the church bells ringing in the yard. I wonder who they're ringing for. I know I can't win, but my heart just won't give in. Last night I danced with a stranger, but she just reminded me you were the one. You left me standing in the doorway crying in the dark land of the sun. I'll eat when I'm hungry, drink when I'm dry, and live my life on the square. And even if the flesh falls off of my face, I know someone will be there to care. It always means so much, even the softest touch. I see nothing to be gained by any explanation. There are no words that need to be said. You left me standing in the doorway crying, blues wrapped round my head.
I'm walking through that summer night, the jukebox playing low. Yesterday everything was going too fast. Today it's moving too slow. no place left to turn. I got nothing left to burn. Don't know if I saw you, if I would kiss you or kill you, it probably wouldn't matter to you anyhow. You left me standing in the doorway crying. I got nothing to go back to now. The light in this place, making me sick in the head. All the laughter is just making me sad. The stars have turned cherry red. I'm strumming on my gay guitar, a cheap cigar. The ghost of our old love has not gone away. Don't look it like it will anytime soon. You left me standing in the doorway crying under the midnight. Tonight and it won't be here. There are things I could say, but I don't. I know the mercy of God must be near. I've been riding a midnight train. If I took you back, it would go up against every rule. You left me standing in the doorway crying, suffering like a church bells ringing in the yard. I wonder who they're ringing for. I know I can't win. But my heart just won't give in. Last night I danced with a stranger, but she just reminded me you were the one. You left me standing at the doorway crying in the dark land of the sun.
That was Bob Dylan, Standing in the Doorway. We've come quite away from the standard Halloween games, but perhaps this is the true feel for this time of the year, when we face the grief of loss, the time of fall, after all. All Hallows, or All Saints, is the feast celebrating all those people now gone who have lived saintly lives, however we want to define saintly. And after All Saints comes All Souls, dedicated to the memory of all who have passed on. We celebrate the grief of loss, but also draw upon the courage to face it all, knowing, as Dylan's song said, that the mercy of God must be near. And even if the flesh falls off of my face, I know someone will be there to care. Can you hold on to this image? It turns around all that ghoulish Halloween stuff and takes us down into the very heart of the season and of our universal and individual journey through the seasons. And so it seems appropriate at this point to enter the meditation for autumn from my CD Journey Through the Seasons. Some people have objected to this meditation as morbid, but we can see at this point of the show that there is something fitting in the morbidity. And Dylan's song and our understanding of All Souls' Day remind us of the eternal cycle, where the autumnal loss is only the prelude to spring regrowth. Let's attend. Autumn. In the midst of our journey into deeper life, we find ourselves now at the time of cleansing, purification, the time when we lose everything that is not essential, as we prepare to enter the darkness of our true selves. This is the time of autumn, the time of dryness, when leaves fall from the trees, hedges turn brown, stubble in the fields is plowed under. This is a melancholy season of loss, as the afternoons grow darker and daylight diminishes and the summer warmth fades to a dim memory. It is the time of growing old. We are in the autumn of our lives when we lose our hair and our teeth. Our senses grow dull, our vigor wanes. It is time to start thinking about death. Every third thought shall be my grave. We have not chosen to take this journey. The journey calls us, or God calls us. I have a journey, sir, shortly to go. My master calls me, I must not say no. No more pretense. We must cut away so only our essential selves remain. The weight of this sad time we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. We cast off all vain things to prepare for the time of emptiness, when the dust shall return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. The element associated with this season is metal. Cold, hard, unrelenting, like the biting wind cutting through our clothes and stinging our face. Here is the axe, pruning dead wood, cutting away what is not essential. This is the season of Advent, the time of year for meditating on the one who comes as the axe to cut back the old and no longer useful parts. And now also the axe is laid unto the root of the trees. Therefore every tree which bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. The organ associated with autumn is the lungs, enacting the seasonal loss on a small scale every time we breathe out, each exhaling a mini death, expiring, exhausted, used up, empty, but only temporary, only part of a cycle of in and out, dying and being reborn, like the larger cycle of the seasons. The negative emotion associated with this stage of the journey is sadness or grief, especially grief over things lost, the loss of leaves falling from the trees, the departure of friends and lovers, and most of all, the passing of time. That time of year thou mayst in me behold, when yellow leaves, or none, or few, do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruined choirs, where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away, death's second self that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong, to love that well which thou must leave ere long. If we face grief long enough, we may reach to the positive emotion for this season, courage. The courage to keep moving on our journey despite loss and grief. And the courage to surrender, to let go. Dust and ashes, we hold them up in our open palm and let the wind take them away. Let them go. We can be willing even to let go our own identity and become an instrument played on by the wind, letting go, completely abandoned to the forces of nature working upon us, transformed into a melodious, though sad, wind chime. Or we become a harp or lyre, our strings vibrating like the trees swaying and rustling in the wind. Make me thy lyre, we ask of the strong autumn west wind. Make me thy lyre, even as the forest is. What if my leaves are falling like its own? The tumult of thy mighty harmonies will take from both a deep autumnal tone, sweet though in sadness. Once we embrace this loss at whatever level, the sadness becomes sweet, even though it leads us to winter and death. We know, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? In that meditation on autumn, we heard poetry by Shakespeare, Ecclesiastes the Preacher, Matthew, and Shelley. The music was by Neil Henry. Find out more about the meditations and the readings at www.journeythroughtheseasons.com. There is a link on the momentsunderlamplight.com site that can take you there too. And to close this evening under lamplight, let's hear Jan Garbarek with the Hilliard Ensemble with Sanctus from the album Officium. The Sanctus in Latin, or Kodosh, Kodosh, Kodosh Adonai Tzavuos in Hebrew, Holy, Holy, Holy Lord God of Hosts, can sanctify us in our departure, strengthening the saintliness we all know lies within, and hallowing our soul at this point in our journey. It's not as heavy as you might think. Listen as the music lifts you right up. It's not Soupy Cells, but then that piece was for a different time in our gathering here this evening. And I'll leave you here, saying goodbye from Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, from me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, hoping to hear from you soon and to meet you again at the same spot next time. Good night.
Yeah.